Maybe it's just that you don't know how to use social courtesy.
Oh, that's old-fashioned.
Watch how
Lizzie Post
and Dan Post-Senate
act as host and hostess. They know that courtesy means showing respect, thinking of the other person, real friendliness.
Hello.
And welcome to Awesome Etiquette,
where we explore modern etiquette through the lens of consideration, respect, and honesty.
On today's show, we take your questions on guests exploring your home on their own, dealing with tension between clients as a dog behavior consultant, foreign language etiquette, and inviting child-free friends to kids' birthday parties.
For Awesome Etiquette sustaining members, our question of the week is about stepping away from a group activity, but not leaving the group of friends.
Plus your most excellent feedback, etiquette salute, and a postscript on texticket and digital stationery.
All that's coming up. Awesome Etiquette comes to you from the studios of our home offices in Vermont and is proud to be produced by the Emily Post Institute. I'm Dan Post-Senning.
And I'm Lizzie Post. Dan, I feel like there's probably etiquette going on in our lives. I know in mine, I mean, it happens every day, right? Like, it happens every day. But I actually got invited over to a little dinner party the other night. It was just like me and the couple and their kid.
Oh, really? Do tell.
I've got to tell you the funny part about it. So, you know, I have friends, imagine that. and some of these friends even go so far as to like buy our etiquette book. This friend, my friends Allie and Mac, I should say not as a couple, but as individuals, Allie and Mac bought the book, they read it, and not only that, but they applied some of what they read to like our dinner party the other night. It was like, it was really sweet and awesome, and it made me feel very taken care of as a guest. And then the follow-up the next day also happened with like the exchange of the text messages. Oh, it was so great. Did you, you know, make it down the hill safely? I walked up to their house. It was really darn, gosh darn delightful, Dan.
Aw. Okay. So
what
I want to hit a great.
You?
I'm going to hit a great big pause on anything that I was going to say, and I just need to sit for a moment with what you just told me because that is awesome.
It felt so good, like it really did.
I'm curious. Tell me more, because I'm hearing something from you, but it's also a little bit different than something that I'm taking away from it that I'm saying,
okay,
boy, that's
okay.
Awesome.
I think what I'm really excited about and what has me just a little bit in awe this morning is that Allie and Mac actually have, since purchasing the book, read it cover to cover now, which it's like hard to get your friends and family to pay attention to the work that you
do. I don't know
do.
That many people that Even, can say they've done
like,
that.
Right? Like, our friends and family don't, like, always listen to our podcast or buy it. Like, I don't think my best friend has even, like, bought the book. And that's not to shame her. She's a busy person. But, like, I will say there's been this delicious little handful of, like, my crew, who's very spread out over the world, who they have. They've purchased the book and they've actually spent a little time with it. And Allie, over the past months, has sent me a couple text messages as she finds things within the book. She found in this little group of neighbors that I'm around, she found the sneaking in of a pair of neighbors' names into the book, and she told me about that. And she really loved the intro to the book and the kind of more theoretical stuff about etiquette. And yeah, it's been delicious seeing her experience it. And then it was delicious to have dinner at their house and experience it on a different level. I don't know, Dan, I could literally talk about this forever, but I do want to hear your thoughts. I also want to hear about some of the etiquette in your world right now.
Oh, well, we've got lots of time to talk about etiquette. Well, the first thing is I just want to reflect back to you. I so understand that just excitement for the people that you're close to in, I'm going to put it in quotes, real life, outside the etiquette world life, you know, reached over into that etiquette world and found something of value, something of interest to them, and particularly the book that you've worked so hard on recently.
It's a good feeling.
And I want to give a big pass to all of the people that we know quite well personally that haven't done that yet. Because
Thank you. Yes.
400 plus page book. It's non-narrative. it's a bit of a lift. I think it's an easier, better read than people think it's going to be, and I appreciate that is an effort that it takes to discover that. And I also think there's something about knowing people where they just feel like they've already got access to it. They don't need to read the book because they know you so well.
True. Yeah.
But the other thing that I'm thinking about was an intention that was a very strong intention of yours about this book from the very beginning. And it was in response to how difficult it had been to host dinner parties because people just didn't know how to respond. They didn't know what the expectations were or how to behave, or because they didn't know how to behave, they didn't think it was easy to just say yes and come or just respond to the invitation in a timely manner that set you up as a host to do the job. And one of the things that I'm most proud of about this book is the work that you put into, and I hope I was supported.
This was really
a particular vision of yours, I think, for this book, is that you wanted to walk people through being able to entertain at home and see that that's a doable thing, and that whatever level of formality you want to do that at, there are some things that make it go well and can open that up as a possibility in your life. And it sounds like it worked with some of your closest friends, which is just so cool.
No, it really did. I've really enjoyed getting to know this couple. I met them while dog sitting. They're the neighbors to the house that I dog sit at. And so whenever I'm dog sitting, which I'm doing right now, we always get together, and we've made vows to get together outside of my dog sitting as well. But this was my chance on this stint that I'm on right now to hang out with them. And it was just really lovely. It was just so exactly what it needed to be. It didn't last too long. It wasn't too short. It wasn't a complicated meal. It was delicious. Everyone enjoyed their daughter. I love this. She eats at the dinner table and she eats whatever they are eating. And sometimes they eat, you know, fish sticks and French fries and stuff like that. It's not like it's all adult stuff, but it was a real delight to experience that just so well. You know what I mean? I know not every night is like that for every family, but like I happen to catch them on a great night. And then I just love the little follow-up texts today. Like, hey, did you get down the hill okay? Like, it just was nice.
I'm doing a chef's kiss here.
It was lovely. It was all the things you hope kind of a casual but still polite evening would be.
I'm so glad that you are finding an increasing dosage of etiquette in your world, Lizzie Post.
Well, thank you.
And I'll come ready. Next week's show will start and I'll give you some etiquette from my world too. Is that a fair deal?
You're going to just focus on mine? We're not going to get to yours?
Well, no, because we have something else we have to get to.
Oh, we do. We have some questions, don't we?
We do.
All right. Well, I am excited to get to those. So shall we get to some questions, cuz?
Let's do it. Awesome Etiquette gets support from Modern Mammals. I am really enjoying our new sponsor, Modern Mammals Hair Product, and I'm going to give you the promo code right off the bat. Go to modernmammals.com and use the code MANNERS, MANNERS, for 10% off. Modern Mammals makes hair products for men, although I'm telling you, Pooja loves them maybe more than I do. I tried their men's hair rinse called Magic Mud. It's a lightly cleansing, heavily moisturizing wash. Take note, listeners, it doesn't suds up like shampoo, so it doesn't dry your hair and scalp out. Really nice when you're wearing winter hats all the time. That means no more poofy, frizzy, limp hair. It also means your scalp better regulates its own natural oils, which is much healthier in the long run. Modern Mammals' goal is to try and keep your hair and head natural. This means they don't distort your pH balance and natural oils like a shampoo would. This stuff is really nice. It works. I really like having it in my shower as an option. I mix it in about every second or third go, and it is really, really nice in your hair. Imagine getting date night hair whenever you wanted. It's much lower effort, but your hair is going to consistently look much better. Modern Mammals doesn't just say that. They have hundreds of customer reviews saying it and me saying it too. Check them out today. Go to modernmammals.com and use the code MANNERS for 10% off. Again, that's modernmammals.com for 10% off with the promo code MANNERS. Don't forget to use our promo code MANNERS so they know that we sent you. And now, back to our show.
Awesome Etiquette is here to answer your questions. You can email them to awesomeetiquette@emilypost.com, leave a voicemail or text message at 802-858-KIND, that's 802-858-5463, or you can find us on social media. On Twitter, we are at Emily Post Inst. On Instagram, we are at Emily Post Institute, and on Facebook, we are The Emily Post Institute. Just use the hashtag awesomeetiquette with your social media post so that we know you want your question on the show.
Our first question this week is about a nosy guest mess. Dear Dan and Lizzie, my husband and I often host my out-of-town family for Thanksgiving. My family is relatively large, so some of them stay at our house and others stay elsewhere. Our guest rooms are upstairs, along with a guest bathroom. One family member, who does not usually stay overnight with us, makes a habit of going upstairs and looking around. Mm-hmm. As it is my house, this makes me feel particularly uncomfortable because it makes me feel like a bad host to have someone possibly looking through my guests' things.
Oh.
There is an additional guest bathroom on the ground floor, so this person really has no reason to go upstairs at all. I believe this individual is well-meaning. She's just a little bit unaware of social boundaries and probably doesn't realize this behavior is invasive and inappropriate. I've asked myself if there is any understandable reason to go upstairs, but it doesn't seem like there's an explanation other than snooping. She goes upstairs for a long stretch of time, and I can hear several doors opening and closing. Additionally, this person has been to my house when no one is staying, and I have happily given her a tour of the whole house.
Mm.
Is there any way to politely ask this person not to snoop through my guests' bedrooms? Or is it better to say nothing and apologize to my overnight guests? Unfortunately, they also have noticed this behavior. I would imagine that feeling called out would make this person feel uncomfortable, even in a one-on-one conversation. However, her actions are making others feel uncomfortable. Thank you so much for all that you do, and any help you can give me. Perplexed hostess.
Perplexed hostess. You get some Emily Post gold stars here. It sounds like you're a delightful host. And I love the way you're thinking about not just your own privacy, but your guests' privacy, and that you as the host are sort of a protector of that, and questioning how this behavior impacts guests and letting us know so many of these details that the guests have been have noticed this behavior too, and that you've apologized to them for it. You recognize this is a bit of a problem. I feel like, Dan, I'm going to make a suggestion that isn't my typical go-to, and I'm curious what you're going to think of it. But I'm listening to all the backstory here, and that we've done a house tour already, so this person has seen the upstairs, that really this is what I think of as a good definition of snooping. There's no reason for it. We're not looking for a medicine cabinet to grab some Advil out of. We're, you know, we're upstairs when there's no bathroom upstairs that we need to use up there. I grew up in a house that didn't have a ground floor bathroom, so you were always being invited to go up either to my sister and my bathroom or to my parents' bathroom, which was inside their master suite. So that, like, a little bit different when you actually direct guests to those spaces as opposed to no need for them to do it. And because we've already identified that this person might not take the polite version of a no snooping conversation well, I'm thinking a beautiful ribbon with a little sign on it towards the top of the stairs, not the bottom of the stairs, and I have a reason for this, but towards the top of the stairs that says, "The upstairs is off limits for tonight. Thank you so much for understanding." Or, "We ask that guests not go upstairs at this time as we have guests staying with us." I feel like something like that would be enough of a deterrent. I could be wrong. You might still hear doors opening and closing. Someone might just step right over this physical boundary that you set. But I like the idea of kind of making it an address to anybody who tried to go upstairs of, you know, "Tonight I would love for this area to be off limits," or something like that.
You know, Lizzie Post, that is not what I expected to hear. It was not even on my list of possible options.
It's like a really, it's kind of a different one for me. But, you know, normally we say either the passive aggressive note isn't okay, or that in general you want to direct people with your words, not, or, well, these are words, but with a spoken conversation as opposed to written words. But we do make little suggestions. For instance, if the toilet, you need to hold the flusher down for a while, like, you know, till the bowl clears. I've seen beautiful little notes in bathrooms about that, or a request to please use the hand towels, you know, set here, not the decorative ones here, or a request to not put, you know, feminine hygiene products down the toilet, or use paper towel instead of toilet paper in the toilet, things like that. I've seen a lot around the bathroom with direction. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping I can apply it to this particular snooping situation.
I'm going to accept it. I'm going to say, you know, that's a reasonable approach. It's an original etiquette, a little sign telling people what to expect and what to do. If we go back to the etymology and the origin of the word. So I guess because you're describing an actual etiquette, a little ticket describing correct behavior, a little sign, I shouldn't be surprised. I was thinking about it similarly to you in the sense that your hosting duties dictate that I would do more than I would usually do if I was confronted with this kind of behavior. Most often I would hold my tongue in a situation like this. I would say, oh, I don't like someone's potentially snooping around upstairs in my house or just satisfying their curiosity by looking around. I am allowing for there to be the slightest possibility that there's something that they need that requires a little privacy. That maybe someone is looking for a bathroom because there's something about their routine in a bathroom where they would rather be a little further away from friends and family or the entertaining space. And at the same time, that's doing some work on their behalf.
You kind of hope that this family member might reach out and say, hey, I've got this kind of issue. Do you mind if you let me use the upstairs bathroom whenever I come over, you know?
Or that they would go upstairs and go to the bathroom and that you wouldn't hear them coming and going from other rooms around the upstairs and particularly rooms that other people were staying in. And one of my ideas was of a practical sort, a little bit like your – I like the idea of the ribbon at the top of the stairs. It looks nice or whatever.
I wanted it to
whatever.
Be pretty. exactly.
Just do doors have locks? Could your guests lock the doors and could you mention to them, you know, not that there's a particular offender, but just that during the party, you're not able to keep track of everybody. And if they had any concerns that they would be welcome to lock their door, it wouldn't offend you or bother you as a host in the home. The other thought I had was sort of a preemptive move of inviting your offender, the guest who's the likely offender, on a house tour first thing. And during that tour, mentioning, oh, well, these are the rooms where they're staying. So I don't go in there. We don't go in there when they're here. I treat those as private spaces. And you just make that a really explicit expectation for yourself as the host and someone who's in the house. And any reasonable guest will interpret that message and stay out of those rooms as well.
Is it odd to offer a tour to someone who you've already given a tour to? That would be my only concern with that one. What do you think?
I wouldn't do it if they didn't do this on a – if this wasn't behavior that they had repeated.
Okay. Interesting. But
I would offer. I'd say, you know, could I show you around? Would you like to take a look? Could I bring you upstairs? And I wouldn't mention it in relation to the previous behavior. I wouldn't say, you know, I've noticed you tend to go do this.
I've noticed you tend to always go upstairs. Could I take you up there now by any chance and escort you around? Yeah, no, I'm
just
with you on
think
that
of yourself as an accommodating host. You're anticipating people's curiosity, needs, desires. And if there's a way that you can guide them through that in a way that wouldn't be problematic for your other house guests, that was another approach that I was imagining.
Dan, if you weren't going to go the silent sign route, or if you weren't going to go the route of taking them on a tour, I think the other thing that I might be willing to consider is that if I heard the noises upstairs happening during a party that was very much so a downstairs party, I would not feel too terribly bad about going to investigate. And then when I find the person saying, oh, I had, you know, I'd heard some noises upstairs, so I came upstairs to check. And then if it happened to be one of the guest bedrooms, that's where I'd feel very confident saying, because I've got guests staying here, I'm actually going to have these rooms be off limits right now. Thank you so much for understanding, you know, and again, you don't want to thank someone before they've said, you know, oh, I totally get it or something like that. But I think
that's an example where you might be able to get away with it.
You might be able to make it work. There you will. Take your pick, audience. But I think that's one where kind of catching them in the act could be part of an easy redirection of like, oh, you know, I'd really appreciate it if. And I like the idea of I'd appreciate it if tonight we don't come up here, or I appreciate it if we just leave these rooms off limits, or, you know, appreciate it if we stay downstairs tonight. those might be ways to work it into the conversation. But I feel like I'm liking the three tactics. I would love to hear if audience members have any ideas themselves, things that have worked for particularly snoopy friends or relatives, people who also, I'm looking at the type of person that this is, and if it is a close family member, a lot harder to just not invite them, which can be another tactic to take. And so I think I like the idea of kind of finding ways to address it. Dan, before we close this one out, the one thing I didn't get to was why I would put my sign at the top of the stairs. I feel like at the top of the stairs, it's less showy to the whole party. It's less of a thing. But if it's at the top of the stairs where you can't maybe quite see it as easily, that someone going up will encounter it. And I like the ribbon because it goes across the whole stairway. And so there is a physical stop moment there. But I kind of like the idea of putting it up there where someone might encounter it on their way up rather than down at the bottom where I think it would get a lot more attention.
Perplexed hostess, you don't sound like such a perplexed hostess to us. You sound like you've got your stuff together and you're just dealing with someone who doesn't quite understand the usual boundaries. We hope that our answer helps you reestablish them.
Hello, boys and girls.
Hi.
Excuse me for interrupting, but why isn't Johnny playing with you?
Well, Johnny's rude and selfish.
He doesn't think of others.
Isn't there any way we can help Johnny learn to be considerate?
Our next question is titled Dog Drama. Hi, Lizzie and Dan. I am a dog behavioral consultant. I've been able to incorporate your principles into the relationship with my clients and their dogs. For this, I cannot thank you enough. Most of the dogs that I see have severe behavior issues. By the time I am contacted, the tension and stress in the home is palpable. Typically, I listen to the owner's concerns, and then I present the family with a preliminary diagnosis and outline a plan for addressing their concerns. Every so often, instead of acknowledging my plan, I will hear something like, "Thank you, my partner wanted to do XYZ instead, and I told them that they were wrong." Oh, goodness. Despite hearing this regularly, I am still caught off guard. At times, I can acknowledge the legitimacy of what the partner wants to do. However, most of the time, the partner's plans are not considered best practices and are potentially dangerous to the family and the dog. I could really use some advice or sample scripts on how to handle this. Or better yet, is there something I could do to possibly prevent the family's internal conflict from being aired? As a small business owner, I've noticed that when one of the parties feels slighted, I rarely am able to schedule a follow-up visit with the family. Obviously, repeat business is key to my business model and is crucial to the future success for the dog. I appreciate any help you can provide. Sincerely, who's your doggy? Oh, that was cute.
I'm so glad you got to read this one, because... And I'm happy about it for a couple of reasons. One, I'm just delighted to think that our show might have applications in the animal kingdom. I just think that is phenomenal. And there was an element of this question that really resonated with me. And that was the part of feeling like you're arbitrating a fight you were never a part of. Because we don't know what that's like at the Emily Post Institute.
No, never. None of you.
No one has ever taken any advice that we offer or support that we've provided and used it to then turn around and attack
Told
a family member or get a one up on someone else. Because no one would ever do that.
No, nobody. We're all above that, aren't we?
It's a definite issue, and it's not something that's easy to anticipate and manage ahead of time. But I do think that there might be a little bit of prep work that Who's Your Doggy could employ. And I was thinking about language as you come in, and it doesn't need to be the totality of how you present, but just acknowledging nobody has all the answers. Every situation is unique. There are legitimate and different ways to do things, that you don't present your expert authority as ultimate and unassailable and perfect in every way. And that gives you a lot of latitude if later on someone tries to wield your advice against someone else to say, well, you know, every situation's a little different in general. And then you can talk about the reasons you give it and this and that. But it gives you some room in terms of negotiating that interpersonal space when someone does do something, which I'm going to go ahead and call a little bit rude, of using your words against someone else in a way that you didn't intend.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the places Who's Your Doggy might be in a tough spot on, because first of all, I love the humbleness of that attitude. I also love the reality in most situations of that attitude. And I would just say for Who's Your Doggy, you might want to come up with a list of the things that are more hard and fast and the things that are more open, so that you kind of know a couple directions to go on particular points. Because I know that with dogs and behavior, you know, we've come a long way, a very long way. But there is some old school belief can go back as far as it's okay to beat your dog into submission. And I would be cautious about leaving space open for that kind of behavioral correction. But I do think leaving a lot of space for, and this is what the trainers at Fetch the Leash did that I was so impressed with. When they're getting to know people, they really leave their mindset open to all the different ways that people might have experienced training or working with a dog, from those very negative reinforcement driven practices all the way towards fully positive or only positive reinforcement practices. I love the fact that, Dan, where they start to move into your type of language, that they recognize how long it takes to really change a dog's behavior. That some things you can do with food reward and things like that, and you can see changes really quickly, but other things, for instance, like barking, it could take you well over a year or more to work on that with a dog. And I think setting up the expectations might also be a place that helps you create more room in this relationship as you, the trainer, start to identify, or the behavioral specialist start to identify the issues and the environment, both like of the dog and of the environment and it's in and the people that are working with it. That could really be kind of that open space that you're talking about, Dan.
I have a sample script question for you.
Oh, yeah. Let's hear it.
I was imagining or wondering about three people sitting in a space together and someone presenting a plan of action, and the people that they're talking to, one turning to the other and saying, see, I was right. You were wrong.
Mm.
I think it's okay, even if you were going to stick to your
plan,
your conviction that what you're recommending is sound and is a good approach, is a professional approach, to say that you could address the particular language that's used. Now, something like, pardon me, I never said anybody was wrong.
I like that, Dan.
And I think that's okay to say, even if your advice is different than the plan that they would take. You didn't say they were wrong. You said you thought this was a good way to go, and you didn't set it up in contradiction to anybody else's opinion or idea. And I think that you don't necessarily need to surrender the position that you're taking, but I think you can also say that particular rudeness wasn't something that I wanted to own or don't want to continue to own or sign off on.
Participate in or something like that. I also think maybe leaning into it. So when you hear that, see, I was right and you were wrong, that saying something along the lines of, you know, way more important than who had an inkling of which training direction we might go after a meeting like this is, do you feel comfortable with the training plan we're setting forward? And is it something that you feel you can enact and work on to help benefit your dog? So in other words, trying to reframe it like, this isn't about, oh, you were right and I was wrong. It's about, what did the specialist that we just hired come in to say? And how can we enact that? Is that something the two of us, the three of us, the five of us as a family can work on for the benefit of the dog? So always reframing whatever the couple or the parents of the dog or the parent of the dog is kind of, I want to say, trying to wrangle into their perspective, and instead always reframing everything about how it's going to benefit the dog and creating success for the future of the dog.
I'm starting to like this answer more and more, and I'm starting to think it might also provide you with an opportunity to address some potential doubts about what it is you're recommending, if there is somebody sitting in the room who really would take a different approach or thinks very differently about this kind of thing than you do.
You're right.
In some ways, getting it called out and having an opportunity to be the one to address how you see that maybe not working in the same way or being just very different than the way you would approach it is a chance for you to actually put your stamp on that perspective and address, I don't want to call it what's wrong, but what the other person in the room might call wrong about the other approach or idea.
Dan, I also really like the idea of Who's Your Doggy taking some time, and maybe Who's Your Doggy, you build this into some of your sessions or allow specific time for it, but to talk about the wrong behavior or the behavior, you know, that moment that someone would say, I think this training method would work, really discussing why that's not something you lean into. I am sure this is something you probably already do, but you might even try building a little bit more space for it and saying, you know, this is the part of the session where I really try to address why I'm not suggesting other things for you to do or things you might have heard of or seen, you know, on the internet or maybe even heard from a vet in some cases. I don't know. I don't know how close the Who's Your Doggy behavioralist ends up aligning with vet advice. But I think that using a little bit of time to kind of address some of the directions you're not going and why you're not going those directions might be a way to head off that comment that Dan's thinking of happening kind of at the end of the thing where they say, see, I told you so. It's like, well, you've already had a whole conversation about why some of these things might work. And let's keep that focus on getting to the things that will work or that we are willing to try, that we do feel capable of trying in order to move a dog forward from a tough behavioral spot. Who's Your Doggy? Definitely a lot going on here. And we very much so sympathize with not wanting to get into the middle of the he said, she said. We certainly hope that our answer can help both you enjoy those client meetings more and can hopefully help benefit a lot of dogs in the future.
Irv Pronsky has spent 8 years with the Sheriff's Department, the last two in the company of Eero, a German Shepherd police dog. Eero searches in response to his master's commands. Through his keen senses of hearing and smell, a police dog can search a building more effectively and more quickly than can an officer by himself.
Our next question is about foreign country conduct. Hi, Lizzie, Dan, and Chris. Your ad for Babbel got me thinking about the etiquette of foreign language exchange and prompted a question for the podcast. Could you share some tips for using local language while traveling? Should I attempt to use the basics of the local language, even if I can't use it to carry on a further conversation? For instance, I don't speak French, yet Babbel may help with that, ha. While traveling, I was once told by a person I had greeted in French that I should not use French greetings if I can't speak the language. I suppose I put them in an awkward position when they started chatting with me in French, only to learn that I didn't actually know the language. This makes me wonder how to be honest while also showing respect for the local language. What ideas do you have for graciously interacting with someone who's developing their English skills? Is it okay to coach them through a conversation, or would doing so be rude? When I speak my second language, Lithuanian, I sincerely welcome it if someone offers me a new word or a grammar correction, but I hesitate to offer that kind of help to folks when roles are reversed. Another question. Given no other alternatives, I've seen people navigate language barriers by typing what they would like to say into Google Translate on their phones and then showing that to the other person. Is that okay? Do you have any thoughts on how to do something like that well? I found you through Higher Etiquette and have latched on to all your work since. Thank you so much for what you do. Your advice guides me through my everyday in Cleveland, Ohio, and has really improved my relationships and perspectives. I appreciate you all. Naris.
Naris, but Dan's got the best line. Dan, say it.
Welcome to the Etiquette Nerd Club, Naris.
Yes, Naris, thank you so much. Thank you for finding us through Higher Etiquette. It's actually one of the reasons that we were excited to do that book. We hoped it would expand our audience in a way that we were interested in expanding it. And so I just welcome and thank you. I also just thank you. This is such a beautifully thoughtful email to us. You just see so much good etiquette work going on around here. For me, Dan, there were a couple things that came to mind right off the bat. And number one was as Emily in Paris and the Netflix show, because she starts off by not having expected to go work in France. She wasn't prepared, hadn't learned French, and she was doing that Google Translate thing like all the time. And it was both working for her and irritating, I think. And it's kind of fun to see how that's changed throughout now a third season of the show. But it's a great illustration of that particular thing. And is it rude or is it helpful, you know? And then I also just really appreciate the difficult position that we all can be put in when it comes to a foreign language, where do you try your best to get as many words, especially greeting type words or basic words, down and use them, and then apologize because you can't speak more? Or, like the French person that Neris encountered, is it insulting to almost like make it seem like you might be able to enter a conversation, but then basically be able to say nothing but hi and thank you, you know? It's a debate out there. I know from our etiquette advice, we always tell people traveling to countries other than, traveling outside their countries, that it's great to look up those magic words type words, to have a small understanding of how the language functions so that you can participate on a very basic level. I still think that's pretty good advice, personally.
I couldn't agree more, Lizzie Post. I think that you have to start somewhere. And it's the most basic of courtesies to make an effort with the language of any place that you're visiting. And the fact that you can't learn the entire language should never preclude you from going or from getting started. And I think it's something to be aware of. You might learn how to say, I only speak a little. Je parle un petit peu.
There you go.
And I found it one of the most useful early phrases to learn. And I just wouldn't ever want to dissuade anyone from investing in and making the effort to learn in the language of any place they're visiting the most common greetings and goodbyes. As you suggested, magic words can be very helpful. Mm-hmm. I would like, or could I see, or where is the restroom or bathroom?
Always the best one.
I'll tell you, learning your left and your right, mm-hmm. or how directions are most commonly given or expressed or shared, is another, I think, really obvious early choice for me as well. I think it's so unfortunate that Neris ran into someone that scolded them for making that effort. I would consider that the bad etiquette in the situation. And
yeah,
we're always hesitant to call out bad etiquette on this show. In this particular case, I will leave the associations connected with it aside and just say, in that particular instance, I don't think that was helpful, useful, or even good advice for thinking about how to behave in future situations.
Well, Dan, it reminds me of the kind of end of Neris's comments, where they're asking about, how should I treat folks, you know, who come visit and are new English speakers?
I love that flip. Yes.
I know. It was just, I'm telling you, like, we've got some really brilliant emails today, guys. And that is one for me where, especially when I was in a service position, so either when I worked any of the various restaurant or food service jobs that I've had, or when I worked at the male clothing store, it was really important for me, and I know this just might not be everyone's MO, but like, it was really important for me to try my hardest to make that space. If I found there was a big language barrier between myself and the person I was serving, I wanted to make that space as inviting and easy and gentle for them as possible, because I know what it's like when I'm in a different country and I'm uncertain of things and I'm hoping people are going to be nice. And I think being that kind of helpful, kind, thoughtful citizen is a great way to be an ambassador for your country when you're dealing with people who aren't from here, or maybe who have just relocated here. And so anyway, I loved that thoughtfulness in this particular question.
I did too. And I think the good etiquette advice there isn't to jump in and start making corrections or trying to help someone advance or grow their vocabulary, but you can always offer. And I think that most people are going to take you up on that eagerly and quickly, and then you're going to be in a position where you can offer that help and you can be even more supportive. And maybe that's about language coaching or vocab, or it might just be about taking more time to listen and really pay attention in ways that let you get more out of the words that you do know. Mm-hmm. I also like the third place this question went. And I have not seen Emily in Paris, Guilty Confession, hand up, shrinks down in the chair just a little bit.
I keep trying to get you to watch it, but I understand you have
a busy
life. But
this use of Google Translate is really, I mean, it's become a very common practice as people travel.
Yes.
And I don't think there is any way to put the genie back in the bottle on using technology and new devices as translators and as effective communication tools to cross language barriers. As is always the case, I think the etiquette rubber hits the road when you talk about how. And if you walk around barking things into your phone and then hitting a button and pointing it at people and expecting that they're going to interact or respond well to that, I think you're in for a surprise, or you're not going to get as good a result or response as you might hope.
And Dan, I think also if you just are mid-conversation, you pull out your phone and start typing frantically into it, someone might think you've exited the conversation, like that you're off doing other things. So finding something like the language to say, let me use a translator 1 second, and then typing it out, you know, like figuring out how to say some of those types of things might, I think, make it less of a abrupt moment when you decide to turn to that translation app.
Learning a greeting in the local language, making eye contact or deflecting your gaze, if that's the more appropriate and respectful thing to do, but figuring out how to approach someone with humanity and to make that human connection. And it might be possible, it might not, but would you mind if we translated on my phone? And that might just be three words, could phone and translate, as you indicate towards it. And if someone nods, then absolutely proceed. They shake their head no, they're not interested, they don't have time, then maybe make that request of someone else. But it's always going to be about the how you do it, not as is so often the case with these incredibly powerful devices, whether or not you do, but how you treat people while you're doing it. Naris, we are delighted that you found the show and that you've stuck around and that you've started sharing some questions with us. Please do keep it up.
If your manners aren't the everyday regular part of you, when special occasions do come up, you may be uncertain, not show up to advantage, and sometimes your lack of assurance results in the embarrassment of doing the wrong thing.
Our next question is titled, Child-Free Friends and Festivities. I am so curious what this question is going to be about. Hi, Lizzie. Hi, Dan. I've been a sporadic listener over the years and have recently been loving and binging your podcast. So excuse me if this question has already come up. I'm a newish mom and my son is turning 3 soon. For his past birthday parties, I have included all of our friends and family friends and friends with kids that we might know. This year, it is a very kid-centric activity at a children's museum. I think it would be weird if child-free adults attended, as they would just be watching kids play for the majority of the time, and it's during public museum hours. So in addition to the kids we do know, there will be lots of kids that we don't know playing as well. I think it would be weird and not enjoyable for our child-free friends. Plus, weird for the families who are not part of the party having so many adults present who do not have a kid in attendance. I work on a relatively small and close-knit team. How would I go about inviting those colleagues who have kids while excluding the rest? Or do I just not invite anyone from that circle of relationships? Wanting to invite everyone, but can't.
Oh, wanting to invite everyone, but can't. If we had had a much longer intro to the show and I had tagged on the etiquette that I'm dealing with in my life right now, it would have been all about Anisha's 6-year birthday party, which she is being a bigger part of planning than she has ever been a part of before.
Aw.
Kids' birthday parties bring up so many questions, so many etiquette questions, that we even have a little subcategory of answers to kids' birthday party etiquette questions that we've developed over the year, because it's such a frequent point of concern for people or place where people deal with some questions. And one of the reasons is that there is a natural thing that happens, and it sounds like you're navigating it a little bit right now, where when you've got a little baby, the party is for them, but it's really for the adults in their life that celebrate them and take care of them. But you reach a point where the birthday starts to become more about the kid, and it starts to be them that are playing the role of honored guest or maybe even host. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be where I was going to start to center my etiquette advice for this question. And that if your child is getting old enough, it might be helpful to think of them as the honored guest and to really focus the party on them. And that might mean that not inviting certain people from your work team isn't about you not inviting them. It's about them not necessarily being set up well or the creating the kind of environment or party that is the best for your honored guest. And that's where you want to keep your attention. I wouldn't worry so much about it being weird to have people that don't have their own kids coming to the museum or coming to enjoy or celebrate a birthday. I think that is a very natural thing for people to do, in the same way we like going to the birthday parties of one-year-olds and two-year-olds because we enjoy supporting the parents and the kids. The same can be true at any stage in life. But the question that you're asking might be better answered by, is that the right kind of guest for the kind of party that you're throwing? And it might be or it might not be. But I wouldn't worry too much about the weirdness of it. And I would think more about creating the kind of social mix that'll create the kind of party that you're looking for.
Dan, you're headed in the same direction that I am, which is I think you don't even worry about who's got kids and who doesn't have kids. I think, and again, as Dan's pointed out, this may start as like a slow shift. It might be a very abrupt shift, but at some point, you're going to be asking your kid, who do you want to invite to your birthday party this year? And you might have a really close group of maybe a mixture of some family and some friends who are people, whether they have kids or not, who are always going to be invited to this kid's party because they're really the core grown-up group of people in this kid's life. As Dan's pointing out, there might be some parties where the party itself is far more conducive to kiddie things. I'm thinking of like if my nephew had a party at this place called Monkey Do here in Burlington. Dan knows it well. Or it's in Williston. I don't know. Somewhere nearby. And Monkey Do would be a place where I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Dan, it's a lot harder for the adults to like to jump in and do at Monkey Do. Is that
kind
correct?
Kind of, although I've been guilty
it's
of getting
of
right
a place
in the ball
for
tank.
The kids. Have you been? Okay. I've only been to the trampoline park. So, and I know that that is a very mixed kids and adult venue. That's one where I think inviting everybody would be really good. But if, for instance, the play place is much more about the kids being let loose in a giant play area and the adults kind of hanging on the sidelines, as so often happens, that's the kind of thing where, yeah, I might wonder. But at a museum where there's things to learn and engage with, I just, for me, I think not worrying about, and granted, this is like a biased opinion. I'm a childless person. And so, and some people would prefer you say a person without children also. That's another thing to just take note of. But I think it's important to not, I think, judge it quite so much on whether the invitees have children or not, but more so, is this a part of the group that would really make a lot of sense for this party? And I am with Dan, that does really shift. The focus of the party shifts about like kind of around ages 4, 5, 6. I feel like you start having more of the friend group and less of the big family party, or you might even split it and have two parties, one with the family, one with the friends. My sister does that for her kids because they're able to do that.
There might be some people there that you don't know.
True.
That are better friends to your child or more connected to your child than they are to you.
I think so. And so for me, wanting to invite everyone but can't, I think I would switch up my dividing lines. And I would think a little bit more carefully about this party and what the goals are for the child for the party and let that be more of a driver than whether or not people have kids or not.
I think there are a couple other etiquette points that are important to make here. One is that theoretically, people shouldn't be offended that they're not invited. So when thinking about managing work relationships, I can understand and appreciate the awareness of the small team nature and that some people might become aware that other people are going and other people are not. Having said all that, it should also be true that these are grown-ups and an invitation to a child's birthday party is something that they shouldn't take a lot of offense at, whether they receive it or don't. And shoulds aren't worth a whole lot in this world. And if you know that there's somebody who would feel left out if three people were invited and they were not, or the other way around, take that into consideration as you should. You have to know the rules to know when to break them. But again, theoretically, people shouldn't be offended that they're not invited. The other thing that I would mention around the host guest invitation etiquette side of things is that if you do choose to invite people, that you're clear with them about the nature of the event, so that they can decide whether they want to participate or not. Instead of trying to manage that choice for the guests, you give them enough information that they can make that choice for themselves, make it well, and feel good about making whatever choice they make.
Wanting to invite everyone but can't, we certainly hope that our advice helps you to do a bit of a frame shift around this particular party, and that you have an event that your child feels wonderfully celebrated for, and that you as a parent feel great about hosting.
Thank you for your questions. Please send us updates or feedback on our answers to awesomeetiquette@emilypost.com. You can leave us a voicemail or text at 802-858-KIND. That's 802-858-5463. You can also reach us on social media. On Twitter, we are at EmilyPostInst. On Instagram, we are at EmilyPostInstitute. And on Facebook, we are the Emily Post Institute. Just remember, use the hashtag AwesomeEtiquette with your post so that we know you want your question on the show.
We certainly hope that you are enjoying this podcast, and if you'd like to consider becoming a paid subscriber, you can do so by going to emilypost.substack.com. You'll get an ads-free version of the show, access to bonus questions and content, including our discussion threads and community. Plus, you're going to feel great knowing that you helped to keep Awesome Etiquette on the air. To those of you who are already paid subscribers of our Substack, thank you so much for your support.
It's time for our feedback segment, where we hear from you about the questions we answer and the topics we cover. Today we have feedback from Amy on not wanting to shake hands from episode 435.
Hi Dan and Lizzie. I had some feedback for friendly, not touchy. Years ago, I worked teaching ballroom dancing every weekend between Thanksgiving and Christmas at the Dickens Christmas Fair. Think Victorian Ren Fair. And as part of the costumes, we all had to wear gloves. As it turns out, the gloves also had a practical purpose of protecting us from cold and flu viruses. The rules were gloves on when handling the guests, off when eating. Every night we washed them in hot water with some bleach to clean and disinfect. Maybe Touchy can find some fun gloves to wear that have a fashion-forward look and can help protect her. All the best, Amy.
Amy, thank you so much for this little tour, a Dickens Christmas Fair.
I know.
I love it. And I also, I love, as you know, traditional etiquettes, and it's so much fun to hear the rules on for the handling the guests and off when eating.
Amy, thanks so much for the feedback. And thank you for sending us your thoughts and updates. Please keep them coming. You can send your feedback or update to awesomeetiquette@emilypost.com or leave us a voicemail or text at 802-858-KIND. That's 802-858-5463.
It's time for our postscript segment, where we dive deeper into a topic of etiquette, and today is an exciting one. It's about texticket. Yes, that's right, text etiquette. And it's a special kind of text etiquette because we are very excited to be announcing a new product launch. Emily Post has teamed up with the Highnote app creators to bring you Emily Post Digital Stationery for enhancing text messages. Today, Lizzie is going to chat with Highnote founder Alexis Traina on digital stationery and all things texticket.
Alexis, thank you for joining us and welcome to Awesome Etiquette. I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm so delighted to be here.
Dan and I are really very excited about this collaboration with you and your team at Highnote. Your app is really about creating better, more meaningful connections between people as we use text message, you know, our most like common form of communication. As soon as you see a Highnote, you can immediately see where the need for something like this came from. Like, I feel like that would almost be too obvious a question to start with. But here we are communicating hourly with this bland, limited visual. And you, my friend, spend a lot of time thinking about how we all operate in the world of texting and digital communications. I was wondering if you might be able to share with our audience what the top three things that you think we could be doing better when it comes to our text etiquette, or what we call for this collaboration, our texticate. What do you think? Mm-hmm. How could we improve?
I mean, it's such an interesting thing because there is such a psychology of communication and the different ways we communicate. And most importantly, I think it's the different ways that we represent the different sides of ourselves.
Oh, I like that.
It's almost like who I am socially is different than who I am personally and who I am professionally and who I am with my girlfriends and who I am with my mom friends. I kind of just started feeling like, all of these sides wanted representation, not just kind of one moment. It's like all the sides wanted to be represented. So it's almost kind of like, who am I at this moment? Who am I at 7 a.m. versus 11 versus 2 versus 10:30 p.m.?
I love it. I absolutely love that.
And so, thinking about the work that we did, I think that so much of it is prioritizing the importance of the connections in this kind of world of mobile living. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that we just kind of always enjoyed together, you and I.
Yes.
And the importance of the care and the thought and the meaning of these communications, these moments, they're big, they're small, they're thoughtful. They're about honoring and celebrating life and each other. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, so much of what you say, just we've been kind of stuck in these blue and gray text bubbles a long time. And it's like, people deserve better.
I love that. I love that idea that people just deserve better. And there was clearly a space to do this in. We had the capability to do it. And I'm curious, I feel like I've gotten through two of yours. What's the third point? What's the third takeaway for texticate?
I think we've lost that idea of that ability to bring ourselves to life. We can bring ourselves to life in every sphere, and yet this one spot is very generic. So I kind of feel like communication should stand out. Mm-hmm. It wants to get noticed. It wants to leave an impression. You want to be appreciated for the gesture, for the sentiment, for the care. And I think that in that, there's something really important about creating communication that reflects well on both the sender and the receiver.
Ooh, I love that concept that we're really thinking about the person that we're writing to. I absolutely adore that. One thing I've noticed from using the high notes is that on Awesome Etiquette, our audience is very familiar with Dan and I talking about how a handwritten note takes time and effort to put together, and how often a text message or an email even can just feel fired off really quickly. And what I kind of love about the high note is because you're putting it to, I'm choosing stationery and I'm picking fonts and colors. I am putting effort into this note and it takes me a moment to construct it. It doesn't take forever. It doesn't take a whole lot of like huge effort, but it does take some thought. And I think that that creates a more meaningful message, both for the sender sending it and trying to communicate that gratitude or that sentiment or that welcoming invitation. And I love the fact that you guys built so much option into the app, because I think that does help with the idea of thoughtfulness, time, and effort in using these types of communications and using them in better ways.
Yeah. And I feel like, whether you're applying for a job and or a college interview and or you're pitching a business, it's like the importance of that follow up to send a thoughtful note is indelible. And I hear it all the time, it's like that extra step is so important and valuable and valued.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. You can really feel it on the other end. That's what I like about this so much, is that you can feel the extra steps happen and you're like, oh, wow, that's not just a blue bubble or a green bubble or a gray bubble. You know what I mean? That's got something behind it. I like the way the visuals can really help communicate the meaning too. You and I have spent a lot of time during this collaboration walking the line between what's appropriate for text messaging and what isn't. For example, if your friend shares on social that a parent had died, would you text them, call them, or send them a handwritten note? And we settled on the reality that this so depends. So much of the appropriateness with text messaging, whether it's a digital stationery, a piece of digital stationery or not, was dependent upon the relationship, the nature of the bad news that was being communicated, how it was initially shared. Is there a personal moment, either where you expressed sympathy to someone or where you maybe received sympathy from someone, where you kind of went, oh, wait, that was like via text and it really felt okay? And I'm guessing that, of course, if it was wrapped up in a high note, it would feel even better. But I'm curious if you kind of had those moments either prior to starting High Note or once you started High Note where you're like, this really feels meaningful and enough. And if you'd be willing to share.
Oh my God. I mean, I think what was really interesting was yesterday, as we introduced our collaboration, one of the notes that we showed off was a sympathy note. Mm-hmm. And one of the commenters was like, wow, I don't know how I feel about that. You know, are you trying to say that a digital sympathy sentiment replaces handwritten? She was kind of like, I'm not sure I believe that. Mm-hmm. And so I was just kind of reflecting because I wanted to respond. And, you know, we live in this new world where the stationery, the paper shops, the card shops across Main Street, across America have started to vanish. Mm. And finding cards is not easy.
That's
so
true.
My response to her was, I'm kind of all for whatever one can get their hands on in the right timing.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if you had a card, absolutely, that would be something. But there's something about quick acknowledgement with that kind of thoughtful presentation
Sure.
that we can get our heads around. And, you know, I think that being able to have access to those communications are what really matter. However,
so
we can get them.
right. When we first discussed that sympathy card, we wanted to be clear that it was never going to replace a condolence card. And sympathy kind of has a broader application. So if I found out that you broke your leg, I could send you a sympathy card. Or maybe if you had COVID, I could send you a sympathy card. You know, those moments in life where things are a bit down or they're a bit rough, a sympathy card can really play a wonderful part in someone being seen, someone's trials or tribulations being acknowledged. Just a communication that lets us know others see us and care about us is so meaningful. But you're right, you don't always have the moment to get to the card. The other thing I found so incredibly difficult about trying to stick to just paper was that if the message, if the communication about the injury or the thing is happening via text message, clearly the person who's experiencing it is saying, I'm okay with us discussing it in this method. And I would feel rude not responding to it at all just because it's a text message and taking the time to write a card that it's like you need both working at the same time, I feel like. And I love the way our sympathy card can operate, not just for a death, but and also that you would really only use it if it was appropriate and the other person had started the conversation and let you know this news via text message.
Well, and I think to your point, it's like, you know, typically speaking, if we're going to be communicating by text in this very vulnerable moment, there's very little opportunity in the blue and gray text bubbles for
yes.
voice
yes.
and tone.
Yeah.
And, you know, that level of connection, as you said, I see you. Yeah. I understand the gravity of this moment. And I've really kind of thoughtfully considered what is the best communication for you. Because I found something very fascinating as I was doing early research. One of the greatest success stories of paper communication
yeah.
in the greeting space was this beautiful illustration of a basket of pansies.
Aww.
And it's called the Rock Star of all greeting cards. And
really?
It was designed in the 50s. And it's this very charming, humble, almost kind of, you know, it's like those old Valentines almost.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah. I know what you mean.
And so what's so amazing about it and why it was so crazy successful was that this little basket of flowers could go the whole gamut. it was like a go-to for sympathies. It was a go-to for get well. It was a go-to for I miss you. It was a go-to for thinking of you. It covered the gambit.
And so, yeah. You could even do happy birthday, right? I mean, like.
I thought it was so fascinating because it has endured the test of time simply because it was so versatile. Mm-hmm. And its general sentiment is with love.
Yeah.
That to me is really what we're talking about. All of these are expressions of love, affection, thought, care. What I loved about your collaboration, Lizzie, was, you know, we really wanted to stay very true to the look and feel that has been your family's legacy, right? Wanted to really kind of create with fonts that reflected it, giving our consumers, users, the option for colors to express themselves.
I love that. I love, you know, that option.
People might love pale blue. Some people might like mint green. Some people might like pale pink or gray or, you know. And then even within our collection, there were some that were standalone note cards and some that were cards with envelopes. And the ones that we really kind of collectively leaned to for envelopes had a lot more weight to them.
They did. No, they absolutely did. I've loved making this collection with you guys. What out of all of them, what is the one you're the most excited about? And what's the one you're most likely to use if they're different?
You and I really kind of loved this one. And I felt like I'm constantly introducing people or like, please meet or please. So when we did introducing, I felt like that was a very valuable note because, again, you wanted to kind of, when you're introducing two people, you know, you want to convey, I think this person's special. You should know them.
Yeah.
Or I think you really get along. It's like, you know, and it also, again, reflects well on the sender and the receiver because anybody who's making that introduction is obviously valuable to the other. So I loved introducing, and then I'm always looking forward. Like, yes. I sent you a text. I wrote you. I'm always looking forward. So I think that that idea and that language that was so carefully chosen by you was right. You know, looking forward to big and little.
Yeah.
And anything in between.
Yes. Oh, I love that one for its versatility. For me, I like the checking in note because I feel like it is so versatile. I could check in about a meeting. I could check in to see how you're doing, if you're sick with the flu or you're going through a divorce or the kids have been crazy lately. Like, I feel like checking in is so versatile. I like you appreciate the, I think the space that the introducing one is going to occupy, because I think it's going to be so well used by people. I think it fills a void. I think that those introductions need to feel special. They don't look special in a just blank generic text message. I also think it gives them the gravitas. I think it sets the stage nicely. I think it does everything it really needs to be. But the one that I think I'm excited about, and maybe this is just my etiquette-y side here, is the RSVP note. Because I feel like I want, okay, I don't get invited to that much stuff, but I feel like I want to use that note all the time. I want more people to feel excited about the RSVP, to feel confident about it. It's a place where a lot of the times we're exchanging host guest dance stuff. Like, do you have any allergies, or is your home accessible for me to be able to enter and, you know, be able to use a restroom and things like that. There's all kinds of stuff we have to check in about. And that RSVP note is, I think, one of the classiest things we came up with. I'm really excited about it.
I'm so in agreement. And I think that the RSVP space, first of all, fun, and you know, it's like the psychology of RSVP is really something. And I've been noodling on it for a while because, to be honest, we're all kind of really bad at it.
Yeah, I think so. I'm worse from the pandemic. I know that made me not respond as quickly to things.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that, you know, just thinking about etiquette and your world and what we're up to, I think COVID just brought so much of it to light.
Yes.
You know, it was like snail mail, God help it. It was like, you know, weeks out. So you never knew, like, person get that, you know, did it arrive? And then it was almost like with COVID, there was so much transition and vulnerability and loss. Mm-hmm. You know, we all knew so many people who had lost loved ones, who had moved, who had done so, you know, who, you know, were in throes of transition and significant world change. So, you know, just reaching out in blue and gray text bubbles was so acceptable and so okay.
Yeah.
So I think that in that moment, we saw a very informal world take place.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's the opportunity to kind of find where does that pendulum swing a little bit out so that we can make room for another layer of self-expression and connection.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Well, Alexis, this has been so incredible. And I want to close out our interview before I get to where everybody can find us on High Note and everything by letting our audience know that we are so excited to announce that on Friday, February 3rd, we are going to be doing a giveaway of five Emily Post Etiquette, the Centennial Edition books to celebrate this launch. So you've got to go to our Instagram. You've got to go to High Note's Instagram. That's at Emily Post Institute and at highnote.app. For all the details, please enter, enter, enter. If you can, definitely sign up for the High Note app. We are so excited about it. We are so excited about this launch. Alexis, is there anything else that you would like to tell our audience before we take it away today?
I just think it's such an honor for us to be sitting here, you know, on this show with you and Dan, who really are taking your great grandmother's extraordinary legacy into these modern times with so much passion. I mean, that is so amazing and honorable. And I just think about her and, like, you know, we've really had to discover and learn about who she was through this process. And what a woman. Like, I just think to myself, you know, think about who she was and the megaphone that she was grabbing onto in times where this was brazen work.
Yeah.
And I love that you all are continuing that and really making it relevant and important. I think in these times where we're living kind of with in mobile life,
we need it.
We need your work. So it's an honor for me and our team who just have so much respect. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Jumping in.
It's been such an awesome journey. Where can people find out more about High Note?
The best place is really to dive in to find us on Instagram.
Okay.
Because we're really telling stories there. Like right now we're knee deep in Emily Post.
Yay. Thank you.
And, you know, we're really talking about a lot of the things that were really special and important to us about this capsule. But one of the things that I love most that we're really able to tell on social media is your incredible notes. So when we were creating, we asked Lizzie, hey, listen, each of these 12 notes, could we create almost a masterclass of correct etiquette and how to create every single note in its need? So RSVP has all the correct and classic communication that one would have when sending an RSVP. Introduction has the beautiful language that really sets the stage for a really beautiful introduction. Checking in has all inspiration of how one would elegantly and easily check in with another. And so I thought the idea of having this masterclass with Lizzie on these notes using the Emily Post approved language was such a treat and allowed us all to kind of reconsider, how should I write this? Am I doing it right? Would Lizzie say it like this? Would Emily say it like this? What would they say? If you're looking for what would they say, how would they approach? There they are.
I absolutely love that. It was so much fun coming up with everything. Audience, please head over to High Note on Instagram. That's at hihinote.app for all of this wonderful content. And don't forget to keep an eye out for the giveaway. Alexis, Traina, thank you so much for joining us today.
The pleasure is all mine.
Lizzie Post, thank you so much for putting this together. I am just so excited about the whole concept of digital stationery and just can't wait for people to get to the High Note app and find out more and take a look at the whole suite.
I'm really, really excited too. I'm beaming. I was so excited when you got to test out the app and test out our stationery on the app, and you sent me a confirmation about our podcast recording. And this morning, it was so great. You used a little confirmation note and sent it with a little message letting me know kind of what your schedule was like and when we might be able to do the podcast. And I loved it. It was exactly what it should be. I'm really very excited about this. This was a super fun thing. This was one of those dreams come true. I had found the High Note app and was loving it and just happened to ask them if they'd want to do a little 100th anniversary edition promotion. And this is what we got. I couldn't believe it. I was over the moon joyed. It's been so much fun using it. I get really good reactions to them. So I am very, very excited for our audience who are able to be able to go and play around with this app and see what it's like and enjoy being able to send some really pretty digital stationery.
Well, thank you so much, Alexis, and thank you, Lizzie Post. We like to end our show on a high note, so we turn to you to hear about the good etiquette you're seeing and experiencing out in the world. And that can come in so many forms. Today, we have a salute from Rick.
Dear Lizzie and Dan, my etiquette salute goes out to our neighbor down the street, whom we don't know personally. On the day I listened to the show about pre-printed thank you cards, we received a card in the mail from our neighbor who said they enjoyed our Christmas decorations. This card was just a perfect pick-me-up for my wife, who worked so hard to make everything look nice for the holidays. We've only lived here for a year and a half and don't know too many folks outside of our immediate neighbors, so for her to send this letter meant a lot. So cheers to Lauren, our lovely neighbor, who we hope to meet in person on our walks when the weather improves. Thanks for all you do to improve the world through etiquette. Rick.
Oh, that is lovely!
Rick, thank you for sending in this salute. That is just such a great example of how a little courtesy can go a long way and can mean much more than someone might even imagine it does.
Truly, truly inspiring. Thank you so much for the salute, Rick. And thank you for listening today.
And thank you to everyone who sent us something and everyone who supports us on Substack.
Please connect with us and share this show with friends, family, and coworkers on social media or however you like to share podcasts.
You can send us your next question, piece of feedback, or salute, and please do keep them coming by email to awesomeetiquette@emilypost.com. You can leave us a voicemail or text at 802-858-KIND. That's 802-858-5463. On Twitter, we are at @EmilyPostInst. On Instagram, we are at @EmilyPostInstitute. And on Facebook, we are The Emily Post Institute.
Please consider becoming a sustaining member of this podcast by visiting us over at emilypost.substack.com. You can also subscribe to the ads version of our show on Spotify or your favorite podcast app, and please consider leaving us a review. It helps our show ranking, which helps more people to find Awesome Etiquette.
Our show was edited by Chris Albertine and assistant produced by Bridget Dowd. Thanks, Chris and Bridget.